Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On today's show, we'll be listening to a speech given by 9/11 researcher Kevin Ryan. He's the author of the book Another 19, and he's been involved in the 9/11 truth movement from very early on. He spoke here at the University of Hartford in 2010 at our World Trade Center Building 7 conference and has been interviewed on this show several times in the past. His speech was given on September 10th, 2020, as part of an online 9/11 Truth Film Festival sponsored by the Northern California 9/11 Truth Group, and it was live streamed at noliesradio.org, where it is still archived. The speech has been lightly edited to fit into this time slot. So let's begin with Kevin Ryan discussing the parallels between 9/11 and COVID-19. So here he is, Kevin Ryan.
I believe that responsible and objective people should always approach any new phenomenon in which the government is claiming to save us from some terrible enemy by approaching it with science and an objective mindset. So I'd like to do that today with regard to 9/11 and another phenomenon called COVID-19. I'll get back to the fact that the scientific method has four basic steps. The first is to observe, then comes a hypothesis, and then some testing and conclusions. And the problem with things like 9/11 and COVID-19 is that many people will do anything they can to avoid the first step, the observation. That way, uncomfortable hypothesis can't force its way into their minds. And in this presentation, we're going to just stay with the observations for the most part. And we'll start by taking a look at some of the observations that many of us have made about 9/11. There are 11 common observations about 9/11 that I'd like to discuss. The first is the incessant fear-based media coverage that accompanied the 9/11 crimes. Immediately on 9/11, the government and media put all their energy into driving the fear of terrorism. The terms 9/11 and September 11th were repeated endlessly, and terrorism became the lead story everywhere as the narrative drove an agenda of military conquest in multiple countries. Remember the color-coded terrorism warning levels created by the new Department of Homeland Security? The media let us know regularly whether we were at an elevated level of risk or some other fearful state. Back then and throughout the invasion of Iraq, the news was simply messaging from the Pentagon, uncritically accepted at face value in every case. The New York Times, for example, led the repetition of war propaganda, and although it has expressed remorse for its role in the Iraq war lies, it has never apologized for having repeated every false story about 9/11 that the government came up with. Another observation is that there was no real investigation. Cheney and others tried to prevent one. Then there was the 9/11 joint inquiry led by people who were prime suspects. They redacted 28 pages of their report and kept those secret for 15 years. Meanwhile, the victims' family members embarrassed the government into starting the 9/11 commission. And in the end, more than 70% of the family members' questions went unanswered. The NIST World Trade Center investigation was a similar whitewash. Yet another observation is that the response to 9/11 killed far more people. 9/11 led to the war on terrorism, in which millions have died and millions have had their lives destroyed. Through the war on terrorism and the authoritarian policies implemented in support of it, democracy around the world was also attacked, as were personal freedoms in a new mass surveillance world. We know there were false official accounts into 9/11. The 9/11 Commission report is false in many ways. It ignored much of the evidence, and the 9/11 Commission claimed that it couldn't even find evidence for many of the most critical aspects of the crimes. It was then based largely on myth and torture testimony, which is now known to be false. NIST reports also avoided much of the evidence, contradicted its scientific experiments, and ultimately resorted to using a computer model that we are not allowed to see. 9/11 was preceded by exercises mimicking the events. Records show that NORAD practiced 28 hijack exercise events within 2 years of 9/11. Six of those focused on hijackings located entirely within the United States. One of the exercises practiced interception of a hijacked airliner that was meant to crash into the United Nations building in New York City, just a few blocks from the World Trade Center. Another exercise practiced just 3 months before 9/11 included a planning document that had a picture of Osama bin Laden on the cover. NORAD said that several exercises were planned for the day of 9/11, and it's clear that some of these, including Vigilant Guardian, were actually being conducted on 9/11. Another war game called Apollo Guardian was also running on 9/11. And it's clear from testimonies of people involved that these exercises confused and obstructed the national defenses that day. After 9/11, a dozen countries opened investigations into insider trading related to the attacks. There was a lot of evidence for financial crimes that indicated people knew the attacks were coming, from put options on the affected companies and industries, to treasury bond trades, to credit card transactions made at the World Trade Center just before it was destroyed. The people in charge of the investigations into this insider trading let the suspects off the hook by conducting weak inquiries and not even interviewing the suspects. The U.S. government finally concluded that although it did look like insider trading occurred, since it was not done by people linked to Al-Qaeda, it was not really insider trading, because we all knew that Al-Qaeda did it. The other countries followed suit and dropped their investigations too. It's clear that there were many benefits for powerful people after 9/11. After 9/11, many billions in profits flowed to the defense industry, and companies in the process of stealing natural resources like oil and gas benefited tremendously from the takeover of Afghanistan, Iraq, and other countries. The 9/11 narrative was very profitable for some people. After 9/11, all the evidence was controlled by the FBI and the CIA. Crime scenes, the witnesses, the alleged evidence against the suspects, including the torture testimony on which the 9/11 Commission report was based, were all controlled and in some cases destroyed by the FBI and the CIA. In a nutshell, the official account of 9/11 is basically a plea for us to just trust the CIA and the FBI. Al-Qaeda was an all-powerful enemy, if you believe the narrative. There was nowhere it couldn't reach, and it had the power to turn unsuspecting people to its side as needed. Al-Qaeda was always terrorizing us in ways that led to seizure of more resources and implementation of draconian policies like unwarranted mass surveillance. For years, it sounded like we couldn't swing a stick without hitting an Al-Qaeda operative. They were capturing people and putting them in orange jumpsuits and making videos of it. They had vast financial networks, extremely capable communication systems, including their own websites, and none of it could be stopped. After 9/11, there was a significant abuse of science. In fact, it seemed that science had been abandoned. For example, all the characteristics of pseudoscience were exhibited by the official investigations into the World Trade Center destruction. There were few experiments done. The results of experiments were ignored or contradicted in the conclusions. There was no peer review, and input from concerned scientists was ignored. The findings cannot be replicated or falsified due to withholding of data, and the hypothesis supported by most of the evidence, demolition of the buildings, was ignored. There was certainly censorship of dissent, but with 9/11, every false hypothesis and conclusion provided by government agencies over the years was immediately and uncritically repeated by mainstream media. Despite media control, a few facts were reported early on, and that led to some valuable information. But many questions that called for answers, and anyone doing critical thinking about what might have happened, were not welcome in polite society. Any such questions became seen as conspiracy theorizing, and anyone associated with questioning the official account was smeared in the media as a conspiracy theorist. Over time, videos and websites became censored as well on YouTube and in Google searches, for example. These 11 observations that I've gone through about 9/11 are really only a part of the body of evidence that now strongly points towards insider involvement in the crimes. Because of 9/11, many of us now know that we're living with a political system that's willing to kill thousands of citizens to drive policy, and a corporate media that's willing to cover it up. The obvious next question is, how bad can that process get? Well, we've seen this kind of deception before 9/11, of course, for example, with Operation Gladio in Europe and the 1990 Gulf War. And we've also seen it since 9/11 with the anthrax attacks and claims of weapons of mass destruction. The anthrax is now known to have come from U.S. national laboratories, and there were no weapons of mass destruction. Just like in 1990, when there were no satellite images of Iraqi troops threatening Saudi Arabia, and there were no babies thrown out of incubators in Kuwait. Those were the things that drove the American public to accept the invasion of Kuwait and the war against Iraq originally. When the real perpetrators want us to believe these kinds of lies, they hire public relations firms like Hill & Knowlton that create the false narratives to drive public acceptance of the crimes. But what about COVID-19? Is critical thinking allowed? Even proposing that COVID-19 is part of a psychological operation can cause some people to immediately denounce the suggestion as promotion of a hoax, implying that it must mean that no virus exists and that hundreds of countries and agencies must be in on it. However, a virus can exist and still be used to manipulate the public for political goals. After all, communism and terrorism existed prior to being co-opted for purposes of psychological manipulation. The coronavirus crisis could have been co-opted after the coronavirus had originally spread, or alternatively, manipulation of the narrative could have been intended from the start through intentional release of the virus. And previous psychological operations show that everybody doesn't have to be in on it in order for most people to follow the script once it's begun, especially these days when information is uncertain and large corporations are making most political and media decisions. I'd like to review the 11 observations about 9/11 again and ask whether they could apply to the COVID-19 situation. So, first of all, has there been incessant fear-based media coverage? We all know there has. If you've been aware at all of what's going on in the media, it's been constant fear-based media coverage. But initially in January and February, leaders in the U.S. were telling us not to worry about COVID-19, actually. It was around the first week of March when a switch was flipped on the official narrative, and instantly the news was all COVID all the time. It was deaths, no matter how few, then projected death rates. People were said to be dropping dead in the street, and mass graves were needed, but much of that was later shown to be false. By May, the CDC's own data was suggesting an infection fatality rate of about 0.26%, which is comparable to a bad flu. The data from June shown here in the white table show that 100,000 deaths were attributed to COVID-19 as of mid-June, and 80% of the victims were over the age of 65. In fact, to this day, the average age of people who have died from COVID is about life expectancy. But 100,000 is certainly a lot of deaths. And for comparison, the 2018 flu season claimed 80,000 Americans. But we should notice one thing, that the number of deaths per year in the U.S. has been increasing significantly in the last 10 years. There's a graph here on this slide that shows around 2010, it started increasing dramatically. And we expect around 2.9 million deaths this year, even without COVID, in the U.S. All the data here is from CDC, and although no new numbers have been reported since March, for the first quarter of 2020, the deaths were 4% higher than 2019, even without COVID. After the death rate stopped scaring people, the new narrative was to report cases. Cases and more cases everywhere. Of course, cases could be considered a good thing because it meant that a lot of people didn't get very sick and we were getting close to herd immunity, but that's not how it was presented. Instead, every story was slanted toward fear. We also know that with COVID-19, some of the things we've heard in the news should have triggered an immediate investigation. For example, when after months of national leadership by Dr. Anthony Fauci, it was revealed that he had funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan laboratory where the virus is suspected of having originated. This was not investigated, and Fauci's response to questions about these inexplicable coincidences was simply to denounce conspiracy theories rather than addressing the questions directly, much as others did when questioned about 9/11 foreknowledge. What does gain-of-function research mean? It means weaponization of viruses, making them more capable of infecting people or more deadly. Fauci and the Pentagon funded labs around the world that manipulated viruses in these ways. Additionally, the fact that people leading the COVID-19 narrative have many patents related to coronaviruses should have been an immediate topic of official investigation for conflict of interest. The most obvious thing to observe about COVID-19 is the fact that the response, including lockdowns, will kill far more people. The ways in which it is killing are numerous, from lack of medical care to suicides and overdoses to multiple famines of biblical proportions around the world. But the destruction of the economy and the inability of people to work is now wreaking havoc on a large part of the world. Just like the war on terrorism, millions will die and millions will be financially or otherwise destroyed by the lockdowns and by the fear-mongering of the official response to COVID-19. Have there been false official accounts? Yes, there has. The COVID-19 scare really began in earnest when some monumentally erroneous predictions of deaths were made by the Imperial College of London, led by Professor Lockdown Neil Ferguson. It was later discussed how Ferguson and his college had a history of such alarmist predictions that had previously caused enormous social damage. It's important to note that the Imperial College receives tens of millions of dollars in grants from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The world's response to COVID was based on Ferguson's alarmist predictions, and it was, like the official account for the destruction of the World Trade Center, based on a computer model that we're not allowed to see. Another similarity to 9/11. COVID-19, of course, was preceded by exercises mimicking the events. There were a number of government corporate exercises that mimicked the events of COVID. Going back to Dark Winter in 2001 and Atlantic Storm in 2005 that were focused on smallpox, to years of biosecurity exercises leading up to Clade X in 2018, Crimson Contagion in 2019, and Event 201 late last year. Event 201 simulated a nearly identical crisis as the one that happened just 3 months later. This was about a new coronavirus. Exercise features included public policy decision-making by corporate leaders, including pharmaceutical companies, in collaboration with intelligence agencies like the CIA. They also discussed how to handle conspiracy theories in this exercise, how to censor information shared on social media, and how to use fact checkers to counter anything that might contradict the official narrative. Was there insider trading? It was reported that four U.S. senators had sold millions of dollars in stock after having been briefed on the coronavirus threat in January. When stocks crashed right after, these senators were protected financially. Senator Richard Burr leads the Senate Intelligence Committee and is still being investigated for COVID insider trading. Senator Kelly Loeffler is also on the committee and is married to the owner of the New York Stock Exchange. Two other senators, James Inhofe of Oklahoma and Dianne Feinstein of California, were also named as potential inside traders. These facts suggest that a few people with power and wealth were able to predict what should not have been predictable. Of course, there have been suspicious benefits for a powerful few, and what could be a different kind of insider trading? The coronavirus scare has generated a huge increase in wealth for a few powerful corporations. Billionaires have benefited greatly, increasing their wealth by almost $1 trillion in just 6 months. With regard to this, it's important to note that 25 corporations are larger and more powerful than most countries. These include Amazon and Walmart, Google and Apple, Microsoft and Facebook, and Twitter. For the leaders of these greater-than-nation corporations, the coronavirus scare has been a tremendous boon, much like it was for other corporations on the top 25 list during the response to 9/11. Back then, companies like ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, and Halliburton were the beneficiaries. At the time the narrative switch was thrown on COVID-19 in early March, the White House announced that the National Security Council would be controlling information about the virus in the U.S. This was much like the exercises had practiced. It was soon revealed that U.S. intelligence agencies had been tracking the coronavirus outbreak since at least November, just a month after the Event 201 exercise. We've also learned that CIA-funded companies like Peter Thiel's Palantir have been hired to carefully manage all the COVID data. And in the UK, it's the same. Intelligence agencies are controlling the data and directing the overall response, just like with 9/11. Like Al-Qaeda, the virus is elusive, all-powerful, and unpredictable. In fact, we've been told that it's not like any virus we've ever seen. We've been told that asymptomatic people can not only spread it, they can be super spreaders. At first, it was only spread through aerosols, but then it became airborne. We were told that you can get reinfected, but that turned out to be a matter of faulty testing, as we'll see in a minute. Cheap, effective drugs had always worked. Even the CDC published research that chloroquine was effective for the last coronavirus. But suddenly, it won't work for this one, despite scientific research that shows that it is effective for this virus. And although other human coronaviruses behave in a highly seasonal, highly predictable manner, this one does not. Oddly enough, you were told that you can't get this virus when protesting, unless, of course, you're protesting against the lockdowns. And the only way much of this could be true is if this new virus had been genetically engineered in a lab to act so entirely differently. But that would point to an even greater need for investigation into the origins of the virus. And we're told not to think about that. Some of this leads to the next parallel between the COVID scare and 9/11, the abuse of science to drive political narratives. There are several examples I have. Before the narrative switch was thrown in early March, a Chinese Journal of Epidemiology published a peer-reviewed article noting the very high number of false positives in testing for infection in China. The conclusion was that around half of the tests being done were false positives. In other words, a lot of people were being told they had the virus when they did not. They were false cases. This same problem has been widely reported in the U.S., but each story is rarely repeated. We've heard that people test negative and positive on the same day, that goats and fruits and frozen chicken wings test positive, and that many people have been mistakenly told they had the virus. At the same time as the narrative switch was thrown, the CDC admitted that state labs had been complaining about the rate of false positives generated by the CDC test kit. The CDC test kit for infection is a genetic test called a PCR test. These tests can be sensitive and they can also be inaccurate. The test is dependent on critical reagents called primers. The CDC test kit originally included three primers, but they all targeted just one gene of the virus, the N gene, or nucleocapsid gene, that's highly conserved across coronaviruses. That is, all coronaviruses have very similar N genes. The three primers were called N1, N2, and N3. After states complained about false positives, the CDC said that the problem was only with the N3 primer. CDC then told everyone to just drop the N3 primer and continue using the kit. Surprisingly, though, they also said that positive results didn't have to be confirmed anymore. However, the N3 primer is not the only part that gives false positives. Per the CDC method, the N1 primers are also not specific. And a search of the National Genetic Alignment Database called BLAST shows that N2 is not any more specific than N1 or N3. I found more evidence for this. In mid-March, I noticed a Twitter post from Dr. Benjamin Tenover, a professor of biology who was a virus expert at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Dr. Tenover's post showed some gel electrophoresis results, indicating that false positives would be a problem in the CDC test kit. Uninfected human cells were responding to the N1 and N3 primer sequences as if they had been infected with SARS-CoV-2. As he noted, this is proof that the CDC primers will generate a lot of false positives. In response to his post, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, a virologist from Columbia, and another virologist at Rockefeller University quickly agreed that the primers were junk and would cause a lot of false positives. Dr. Tenover assumed incorrectly that the CDC would, of course, correct this problem. What the CDC did instead, as we discussed, was just remove the N3 primer and then change the protocol so that positives didn't have to be confirmed. And this is the same CDC test kit that's being used today. Another way in which science has been abused during the COVID crisis is through the ways that deaths are recorded. Anyone who tests positive for SARS-CoV-2 and dies has COVID-19 written on their death certificate. In other words, there's no distinction made between people who died with the virus and people who died from the virus. And testing the patient isn't even required, as long as it can be assumed that COVID played a role. Add to this the fact that hospitals are financially rewarded for listing COVID as a cause, and we see that inflation of deaths due to COVID has been a real problem. Dr. Scott Jensen, a state senator from Minnesota, spoke out about it, saying that in all his years, no one had ever told him that he had to write a specific cause of death on a death certificate unless that was an actual cause of death. By summer, the lockdowns were being lifted and many people were getting tested, including anyone admitted to a hospital. And more cases, therefore, were being reported. And when any of them died after testing positive, COVID was listed as a cause of death. This policy is indefensible on its own, but the problem of false positives makes the whole thing worse. Going back to that narrative switch that was thrown in early March, do you remember when all the experts were telling us not to wear masks because they would not be effective against COVID? Well, I certainly do. This was the message from the WHO, the CDC, the U.S. Surgeon General, and from Dr. Anthony Fauci. They all said not to wear masks, and not solely because masks were in short supply, as has been claimed since that time, but since there was no evidence that masks prevented the spread of infections like COVID-19. Over a short period of time, all these experts have done a 180-degree turnaround on the subject, but the existing science behind the original recommendations has not changed and is still as valid as before. What happened to Dr. Jensen when he spoke out about the false attribution of COVID as cause of death? He was censored. An investigation by the Minnesota Board of Health was initiated, which ultimately exonerated him. He was simply stating facts openly and questioning the official policies being implemented. But many others have seen similar responses to their questioning. Despite the censorship and bullying, many doctors are speaking out about the reckless, irrational response to COVID-19. and most of them get attacked by corporate media and fact checkers. What we can be sure of is that the day these fact checkers fact check the 9/11 Commission report is the day that we can believe they're working in our best interests. Now let's review the parallels quickly again. With COVID-19, just like 9/11, there's been incessant fear-based media coverage. There's been a lack of investigation. It's clear that the response is killing far more people. There have been false official accounts. The COVID crisis was preceded by exercises mimicking the events, just like 9/11. There's been insider trading, just like with 9/11. There are suspicious benefits for a powerful few. We have intelligence agencies controlling the information. And we're dealing with an all-elusive and all-powerful enemy in SARS-CoV-2, much like Al-Qaeda. And I gave several examples of the abuse of science, which is also a hallmark of 9/11. And again, there's been censorship of dissent. It's evident that 9/11 and COVID-19 share many common features and outcomes. And as with 9/11, we've been discouraged from engaging in critical thinking regarding COVID-19. But I have one last observation. Have you noticed that terrorism has not been in the news this year? Every year since 9/11, there's been a major terrorist event in the US. And many people have died from terrorism each year, but not in 2020. Could it be that COVID-19 is somehow replacing terrorism? If it is a psychological operation, we have to ask who's behind it. Who benefits? Billionaires and some of the largest corporations in the world. And they just happen to be providing the information and the solutions. Who are we being told to trust? The World Health Organization, the WHO, Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, and the CDC are the people we're being asked to trust in the United States. So let's have a closer look at these people to see if they are the humanitarians we're being asked to believe they are. The WHO has driven most of the response to COVID-19. And the WHO has a history of hyping pandemics to drive pharmaceutical company profits. That was the case in 2005 with the bird flu. 150 million people would die, WHO said. And again in 2009, when WHO was widely criticized for changing its definition of a pandemic to help sell vaccines for the swine flu. The WHO gets 80% of its funding from private donors, largely pharmaceutical companies and those representing their interests. The largest donors include Bill Gates' Vaccine Foundation, Gavi. WHO's current director, Tedros Adhanom, is the first non-medical doctor in that position and has a history of being called Dr. Cover-Up for his efforts to cover up epidemics in Ethiopia. And finally, believe it or not, the WHO hired Hilda Knowlton to manage its COVID-19 messaging. Remember those babies thrown out of incubators in Kuwait? A complete fabrication that never happened? That was the product of Hilda Knowlton. And they're now giving us the story on COVID-19 on behalf of the WHO. Bill Gates is not a doctor. Hopefully people recognize that. He is in fact a ruthless schemer, according to his Microsoft co-founder, Paul Allen. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has monopolized the global health industry, and they've invested heavily in mechanisms of population control via vaccines, biometric identity mechanisms, and a cashless society. The Gates Foundation and the entities it funds were behind the exercises that practiced for this crisis, including Event 201. And when discussing COVID-19 recently, Gates has said, we have to prepare for the next one. That will get attention this time. I call this pandemic one.
And again, you were just listening to a speech given by 9/11 researcher and author Kevin Ryan. In a speech given on September 10th, 2020, as part of the Northern California 9/11 Truth Annual Film Festival. You can see the full video and the others that go along with the conference on the great website NoLiesRadio.org. And again, that's NoLiesRadio.org. To learn more about Kevin Ryan and to read his recent article called Is the Coronavirus Scare a Psychological Operation?, you can go to his website, which is digwithin.net. So digwithin.net. And please tune in next week to hear the final few minutes of this powerful speech, which could not fit into the timeline allotted for today's show. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.